Hi, this is Mitch Dunford at the National Alliance, and this is our third episode in this program business series with Market Scout. And as usual, we've got Joanne Clark on the call. Hey, Joanne.
Hi, Mitch.
How you just got hit with the hurricane a bit, right?
Well, I got really the weekend of it. We ended up with the tropical storm aspect of it, but we certainly kicked risk management into place, and I had my safe room all decked out with the right amount of red licorice and water.
Awesome. The two essential emergency foods.
Exactly.
Awesome. And then Laura McCormick, Senior Vice President of Professional Liability Practice at Market Scout. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you. Happy to be involved.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and your career in insurance.
Sure. Yes. Well, I am pleased to be involved today. My background is in professional liability programs. I spent I don't like to count the years because it goes on and on. It's getting higher and higher. But I spent almost 20 years doing professional liability programs for associations on the retail side. And that is my passion. They are awesome. There are so many different aspects of them, and they're just really fun to do. And now that I'm over on the wholesale side, I handle all lines professional. For retail agents, E&O, D&O, fiduciary crime, tech, employment practices liability, and helping agents market those submissions and give them the market access that they might not have.
Were you one of those people who planned on going into the insurance business, or did
yes. You could hear it in my voice. I know it. I am that crazy person. I went to Virginia Tech, and I have a degree in finance and a minor in insurance. So
wow.
I did not just stumble into insurance. I planned it. I started off at Allstate Insurance. Was my very first job. I was a claims adjuster. Can you even imagine? Whew. It's been quite a fun ride. Insurance industry is great.
It really is.
So many different things that you can do. So, yep, I'm that weird one that
the one
fell
in 100.
Into insurance and staying there. I think there's more than you know. Most people don't get it. I do.
Once we're in, though, we can't leave. It's a great industry to be in, and some amazing people. So. Yeah. Thanks for joining us. With that, Joanne, why don't I turn some time over to you to talk with Laura? I think we were going to title this episode "The Devil's in the Details." You want to talk about that?
Oh, I sure do. Thank you, Mitch. And Laura, it's nice to talk with you today. We've had Richard for a couple of times, and now we get you, and no Southern accent I'm not detecting. And now
born and raised in Virginia, you would think. When I was on the East Coast, they thought I had a Southern accent. Now I get down here to Texas for the past, 14 years, and I'm not sounding so Southern anymore.
you're not, but if you stick around Richard for too long, that will start to rub off.
Yeah,
so
sure
somebody
does.
Help me if that starts to happen.
Okay, we'll be fixing to tell you if that does.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're glad you were able to join us today too. And in the past couple of podcasts, we've touched on things a couple of times. And for the benefit of our listeners, who this might be the first one that they're logging into, we've spent some time talking about successful programs have spread of risk and then also have high premium volumes. And in light of what's taken place catastrophe-wise and still taking place over the last couple of weeks, is there anything, Laura, that you'd want to share about spread of risk?
Sure. I mean, just to kind of recap, like you said, what you guys have gone over in the past, really successful programs require an adequate spread of risk demographically, by size and geography, as well as the critical mass on premium volume to maintain an actuarially sound underwriting program. So, I mean, we can just look at what has gone on in our country over the past 2 weeks. You've got wildfires burning in the Northwest, hurricane after hurricane coming through. In simplistic terms, let's say as an agent, you write a bunch of logging companies and you decided you wanted to put together a program. Well, you better hope that you didn't have all your logging companies in Montana, because at this point in the game, they're going to be pretty well wiped out, and that's not going to help a program. You would really like to make sure when you put these programs together that you have large risks, small risks, and that are, have a good demographic spread so that you can withstand the losses or if there were to be a catastrophic event that comes through. So, you know, keeping that in mind, it's a process to look over all of the risks that you're wanting to insure to make sure that you can come up with something that hopefully can be actuarially sound over the years.
Oh, great. Yeah. And you know, and I think one of the things too is we in our industry tend to take a look at things through the eyes of insurance, and we do. We take a look at catastrophes, and it's the damaged property and, you know, and the destroyed logging companies and the timber and so forth. And we certainly want everybody to know too that we care first and foremost about the people whose lives have been impacted.
Absolutely.
For the rest of their lives. So
This time around, it has really become quite a humanitarian crisis, you know, with the things that are going to be happening after the crisis, after these, you know, the hurricane comes through, after the fires come through. It's the resulting damage. And those are other things to keep in mind as well when you do programs. So.
Absolutely. Well, we've also talked in the past about the role of the underwriter. And I know that Richard and I have had a lot of fun talking about, do you bring somebody in who's skilled in that program, who understands, you know, pool inspectors or understands professional liability, or do you bring someone in who absolutely has a solid understanding of insurance coverages and underwriting? And Richard has very clearly made the point that you need to bring somebody in who understands coverages and understands underwriting, and they also need skills in addition to that. Can you just share a little bit from your perspective, Laura, on the importance of that underwriter in the retail agency?
Sure. I think a lot of, you know, when you're looking at, you've decided to come up with a program and then it's time to staff for that. You really need to look at what type of a program do you have? Do you have a product-driven program? Is it a property program? Or is it a program for a certain class of business? So I think it's critical that the underwriting function within your retail agency is somebody that has a very healthy understanding and knowledge of the insurance industry and the rating and the importance of, you know, protecting the integrity, the underwriting integrity of the program. That being said, as a program administrator, you also have the responsibility of growing a book of business. So you need to have somebody that has that perspective, more of a marketing perspective, and can go out there and say, who am I going to sell this program to? How can I get really good risks into this program? That person needs to understand the industry that they're selling to, whether it be pool inspectors, whether it be an answering service call center type thing, or environmental consultants. They need to be able to talk to these people within their tech sector and with their vernacular so that they feel comfortable that they're bringing, these ultimate insurers are bringing their business to an agency that understands what they do. And that's critical to the success of a program.
It almost sounds like you're looking for someone who brings some really unique skills to the table in being able to merge their insurance knowledge and their underwriting, as well as to have a sales arm of that as well. And are those individuals hard to find?
It's definitely a unique personality, but really what it is, it can be quite a tightrope that you walk. You know, from an underwriting perspective, you want to look at something very much black and white, it fits or it doesn't. From a marketing perspective, you want to get things into the program. You want to see how you can make it fit, and you want to grow things. And then you also have that sales aspect where the person is out there saying, yeah, we'll write whatever. Bring it on in. We all know those sales guys, right, that go out and say, yeah, we can write that. We can write that. You have to have a strong production underwriter that can say, no, that doesn't fit the program, but I can find you something else outside of the program, or can talk to the person that comes in and says, do you think this would work? And we'll work with that production staff to say, well, if they're doing this, this, and this, then yes, it'll fit the program, and everybody's happy, or it doesn't work and they say no. So it is definitely a very interesting position to staff for, but a very rewarding position as well.
Laura, what other positions are needed inside the retail agency that's creating a program besides the underwriter? Are there other positions that would be involved in a successful program?
Well, as a program administrator on the retail side, I think we all know, all of us that know and love the insurance industry, we all believe that it is a relationship business. So along all staff lines, it's important to have people that can provide the service at the level that the clients require and need. So I have always felt that the administrative staff, the service staff that you bring on board to support the underwriting and to support the sales process is critical, because those are the people that are have the touch points with the ultimate insured and policyholder. They're the ones that are giving them the certificates. They're updating auto ID cards. They're there if there's a claim comes in and they're going to take first notice of loss. They're, you know, the goodwill ambassador of your program. So they need to be, you know, very socially skilled administrative staff that you value, because they are the backbone of the program.
Now, are those individuals, Laura, typically currently employees of the agency, and they just move them from non-program business into program business?
Well, you know, I can answer that question based upon my experience and how I handled it when I was running programs. If I was starting a brand new program, and maybe it was just from the ground up, I would probably pull from the resources that I had within my staff to help get the program up and running, and because they knew the ins and outs of program business. And the benefit of that is that as an employer in running your business, you want to keep, you know, attract and retain talented staff. A lot of times people can get stagnant, but when you have these new programs coming on, you can pull somebody from doing something else, put them into that, and hopefully maybe eventually you promote them into underwriting or, you know, marketing and sales. So I usually try to get somebody that has a little bit of experience and then move them along and then fill in on a lower level with some new people and give them another growth opportunity, if that makes sense.
It does. It almost sounds like you create a career path.
Absolutely.
In that. So we have the underwriter, we have the administrative staff. What about claims? Does a retail agent need to create a claims department for program business, Laura?
Well, no, they definitely don't need to create a claims department, but the role within claims, that role is really going to depend on the agreement with your insurance company partner. So if you are, let's say you're doing a property program for pool distributors or something, you know, equipment, and you're writing it with a large admitted carrier here domestically in the U.S., they're going to have their own in-house claims department. So as a program administrator, when a claim does come in, you're going to tap into the insurance company partner's claim staff, and you will just be more of an advocate in the claim process, take first notice of loss, and, you know, be there to hold their hand and get them connected to the right person. Now, if you are working with maybe, say, a professional liability program that's over in the Lloyd's marketplace, and let's, you know, as an example, let's just say it's an insurance agent's, you know, program, right? So you put this thing together, you're working with the Beasley Syndicate over in London. When you set that up, you're going to work with the insurance program partner. You're going to decide, do they have in-house claim or do you want to contract with a third party? And if they're going to contract with a third party, you guys agree who that's going to be. There's probably going to be a law firm that will be put in there as the insurance counsel and as the program administrator, once again, you're not going to be adjusting those claims, but you're going to be the advocate for the policyholder to take in the loss and get it to the proper party.
Now, we really shouldn't even be talking about claims law, right? Because if we do the right job of the program, we won't have any. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Although I always say that those validate the program. If you're out there selling policies and there's never any claims, do they really need the coverage? Oh, and when they're you do have a claim, that's when you shine as the service provider, because you get in there and you help them and you show them that value add that you provide as the program administrator.
Right. And you know, I think over the years, I've always said that at the end of a claim, when everything's said and done and the ink's dry on the draft or the electronic transmission, that a real sign of doing what's right for the client is when they stay with you after a claim because they want to, not because they have to.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want to hold them hostage.
Right. And again, if you have the right insuring partner on your program, they'll stick with you with the claims. They'll stick with you through the hard markets and the different catastrophes that come along, and it builds the relationship. And you'll find that the insureds, maybe they do have a claim and maybe they get a little bit of an increase, but they want to stay because they were so happy with the experience, even though it's unfortunate. So that at the end of the day, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that full circle relationship.
Yeah, that's a great point. So when you structure the program and we talk about, you know, financing it through an insurance product, we always see risk management / loss control really being hand in hand with insurance. Where does loss control come in program business, Laura? Is that at the retail agency end of things with responsibility for loss control?
The retail agent within a program really is a critical component of the loss control, because the retail agent is the one that has the relationship with the insured in the services in the industry where they provide those services. So that retail agent is going to be talking with the insurance company partner about what the exposures are, and then further down the line, what can all the parties to the equation, the agent and the carrier and, you know, the insured, how can they come together and how can the retail agent work with the carrier to get some loss control and risk management services together that are specific to that insurance industry that can help them control their exposure to loss? So the retail agent's responsibility there is to effectively get the communication to the insurance carrier and these loss control providers about what the exposures are, and putting together a program that you can give back to a policyholder to actually help them. And that's a value add. It's a, you know, something that a policyholder can say, well, yeah, I get insurance, but I also get all this great advice on how I can avoid slip and falls on my work site, or, you know, those type of thing. And it's really wrapping your arms around the relationship with your insured to minimize risk and provide a value.
Yeah, and I always say that that's a great example, too, of the difference between, one of the differences between just an order taker and being that advisor, where you're right. More involved than just, let me sell you a policy. So, Laura, of the positions within the retail agency or the responsibilities that we've talked about from a service standpoint, at what point in time is it the right thing to do? And, of course, that's going to depend on the business, the program, and the agency. But do we outsource some of these? Do we outsource the loss control? Do we outsource the claims? Do we outsource any of the functions outside of our retail agency, or do we keep everything in-house?
Yeah, I think that's going to be kind of a two-part answer. Without a doubt, you always keep the underwriting and sales functions in-house, because that is the relationship building portion of the equation. That's the most important part. You have to garner respect from your prospective insured so that they bring the business to you and that you underwrite it properly and then you service it properly so they stay with you. The other things, you know, we discussed that claims probably are more effectively handled by the carrier or outsourced to a third-party administrator, because claims, again, in the event of a loss, that's where you shine. These people come in and take care of these people when they've had a loss. They protect them by giving them defense, or, you know, they're indemnifying them for their actual physical losses, and they do it in a very professional and expedient manner.
So, Laura, we've talked about the staffing needed in a retail agent for program business. And, you know, what do you do from a staffing standpoint with underwriters? And, you know, how many do you need? How many administrative support staff? What size staff do you need? Can you share a little bit?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And probably if there was a hard and fast answer, I'd be a rich woman right now because I would sell that intel. But a lot of it is really just a balancing act. The very critical thing is to have a good, solid underwriter on staff that understands, you know, the objective of the program and how you're going to achieve those objectives. So you need to have a really good, solid underwriter and a good, solid administrative person that can get the program up and running. I kind of alluded to before, if you have the luxury of having some other staff that you can pull from, if it starts to, you know, grow a little bit faster than you thought, then they can come in and help. It's such a balancing act because you don't want to overstaff on the front end and get overextended expense-wise. But the very worst thing that could happen is that you are so understaffed that you can't meet the obligations and expectations of your clients, and then they just don't come to the program anymore. So it definitely is a balancing act, but without a doubt, you have to have a solid underwriting function as well as administrative to actually get the documents out, all your quotes out, policies, and that type of thing.
How many of those services, whether it's the claims, the loss control, the program administration, can they be outsourced, Laura? Does that make sense for an agency to say, look, I'm not doing this in-house, and outsource those functions?
It can make sense. And again, that is something that it's going to depend where you are in the process of being a program administrator. When you're in the infancy of getting programs up and running, you know, you might not have all the staff that you need in-house, and it might be a good idea to outsource a few things. I would say from my experience and what I see all over the place, without a doubt, you do not want to outsource the underwriting function or the sales function. Those are the touch points with the end user where you are relationship building and building trust and getting the documents to them. That front end function is critical to attracting the business, maintaining the business, and retaining the business. So that needs to be a solid relationship building team that you should without a doubt keep in-house. we talked a little bit before about the claims function. So as far as actually adjusting claims, I think more often than not, that is outsourced. And the benefit of that is that you have more experienced adjusters that hop in and handle the claim and get it done as quickly as possible, or get it to the right people that can usher it through to a successful fruition, whether it be with a law firm or, you know, a third-party administrator. So I see that as being something that is most often outsourced. Again, if you're in the more on the infancy side of your program management plan, a lot of times I see agents outsourcing the automation function, which is, you know, setting up and clearing risks and issuing policies and certificates and that type of thing. And that can really be a good solution for people that have not hit that critical mass to have a little bit of flex in their budget that they can put out the capital expenditure to buy the technology to be able to actually issue policy and do all of that stuff in-house. So again, I think that overall, when you're making a decision on what, if you're going to outsource or keep it in-house, it's going to depend on your budget a little bit and just how, if you're ready to make that capital plunge to have the technology to do it in-house.
That makes sense. So Laura, you clearly have a passion for program business, and your expertise and the information you're sharing with us today has been great. I've enjoyed learning from you. What is the takeaway, Laura, from you in program business? If you had to think of one thing that made you love program business the way that you do, what would that be?
Well, I guess you can tell I really do passionately believe in programs and specializing in certain areas. It's been good for my career. And I really believe the great thing about program business is that if you do it properly, you basically are building an annuity that will continue to thrive and grow. And it will also set you apart from your competitors in the industry. So I can't say enough good things about program business. There will be days that you might be pulling your hair out, but that's a good thing because you just have such volume and activity that it's the gift that keeps on giving, as I always say.
That's great.
So.
Well, thanks, you guys. Very interesting conversation. I guess the next episode, what we've talked about titling it is Tailoring the Coverage, Building the Book of Business. Is that right?
That is.
Joanne, give us a little insight into some of the areas that we're going to talk about.
Well, one of the things that we've talked about over the last couple of podcasts has been you have to have a product that meets the needs of the class of business that your program is going to be based on. So we're going to talk about how do you know what those coverages are, whether it's insurance coverages or whether it's services that are needed, you know, because it's not going to do a lot of good to create a program if you can't protect the client for the things that are most likely to happen to them.
Absolutely.
So we'll talk about tailoring the coverage and then some ideas for how do you build the book? You know, is it a relationship with an association? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the marketing of it? So we'll talk about getting it put together, having the right coverages, and then what can we do to add more numbers to it? And Laura said earlier that premium volume is important in program business. So what can we do to help increase that? So I'm looking forward to hearing all those great ideas coming up.
Yeah, thank you both very much.